PWA, and WHO indicate that the amount has been decreasing. In 1975, the amount of groundwater storage was 1,200 million cubic meters. The amount decreased to 800 million cubic meters in 1995. The storage is expected to be exhausted in 2020 as the population grows day by day.
طبعا احنا الان نقف عند البئر الشيخ رضوان رقم واحد.
We are now at Al Sheikh Radwan well number one. Being exhausted, the well was replaced with another well dug by the Gaza municipality using the same equipment as the former one. We are now going to the new alternative well. This is the water meter of the well that measures water supply quantities. This well supplies 120 cubic meters per hour. It's a relatively high rate in Gaza compared to the idea that the groundwater aquifer has become shallow. The annual recharge quantity of the well is estimated at approximately 50 million cubic meters. In contrast, average annual demand of water is estimated at approximately 200 million cubic meters. So there is a big gap between supply and demand. This shortage caused salinity of groundwater. According to the international standards, the maximum chloride concentration in drinkable water is 250 milligrams per liter. Groundwater supplied through municipalities' networks contains approximately 1,000 milligrams per liter. Sometimes chloride reaches 2,000 milligrams per liter. This is due to seawater intrusion. There is scarcity of water. What can we do? We just keep over pumping. The aquifer is like a piece of sponge full of drinkable water. When we pump the entire quantity of water that was refilled by rainfall, groundwater turned saline due to seawater intrusion. Water supplied to this area is too saline. Frankly, it is not suitable for human use. In addition, we suffer from interruption of the water supply. Sometimes, water becomes available at the same time as a power failure. So I have to use an electrical generator, like this one here, to turn on the water pump engine for pumping the water in this tank to the tanks in the roof. I put this water tank here to get it full of water when water becomes available during a power failure. Actually, the water we receive is very saline. It is as saline as seawater. Though we use it in our daily domestic use, nobody can drink it.
بالنسبة للحمضيات بصفة عامة تتأثر بنوعية المياه.
Citrus, in general, is affected by water varieties. This type of citrus is of good quality. This is due to the good quality of water that irrigates citrus trees in this area and makes them grow well and produce better quality products.
بصورة جيدة ويكون الإنتاج في بجودة أفضل.
كل ما كانت نسبة الملوحة كل ما زادت نسبة الكلور أثر على
The more the salinity rate increases, the more chloride affects citrus. Citrus is sensitive. It does not produce well unless it is appropriately maintained. Orange trees have been replaced with these olive trees. We hope this will succeed and compensate for the loss of citrus. Olive trees can bear salinity and more dangerous time factors. They need less water than citrus trees, which need large quantities of water. Olive can bear saline water much better than citrus because the roots of an olive tree are stronger. Water in this area was of good quality, but now the salinity rate is high. This grove used to produce 200 tons. Now it is all dried up because of the scarcity of good quality water. The quality of water is relative. Water in the area of the Gaza Valley is not of as good a quality as it is in the northern or southern areas of the Strip. In the northern area, you can plant anything because of the good quality of its water and soil. Even the soil quality is relative. The quality of water in Rafah, for instance, is good compared to the water in the Gaza Valley area.
Groundwater is the only local water resource that meets the growing demand of water for housekeeping, agriculture, manufacturing, etc. in the Gaza Strip. The qualitative and quantitative decline of groundwater is related to the resources like rainfall that recharges the groundwater aquifer.
This well was established about 60 or 70 years ago. Now it is abandoned because of the extremely high concentration of salinity in its water. Olives depend on the rainfall in January. When it does not rain during this month, olives' productivity declines. As you see, the trees in this grove are dried and about to die because of the scarcity of good quality water. The average rainfall is stable here. The annual average reaches approximately 110 million liters. But the Gaza Strip's needs grow constantly. According to some recent estimates, Gaza's annual need is approximately 200 million liters of rainfall. Just half of that quantity is available annually. Most rainfall in the Gaza Strip is missed due to widespread construction and concrete structures, which cover 30% of the area of the Gaza Strip. This percentage may be, according to the international standards, very high. It limits utilization of rainfall to recharge the aquifer.
Gaza Valley, one of the longest valleys in Palestine, was one of the main sources that recharged the groundwater aquifer of the Gaza Strip. It stems from the hills of a small village in Hebron. It extends from the east of Gaza to the Mediterranean coast in the west. It is about 160 kilometers in length. Its length in the Gaza Strip is 9 kilometers inside Gaza. The annual amount of its water runoff is estimated at 20 million cubic meters. The Israeli occupation blocks the flow of water and prevents it from reaching the Gaza Strip.
The Gaza Valley area should be a nature preserve that protects Palestinian wildlife and migrating birds. This valley extends from the east to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. Unfortunately, the Israeli occupation prevented the water of the valley from reaching Gaza. Thirty years ago, this area, which extends from the Al Zaytun neighborhood to the Gaza Valley, was known for its citrus groves, and orange groves in particular. The Gaza Valley is one of the thefts of the Palestinians' water resources committed by the Israeli occupation. We are talking about 20 million cubic meters that have been stolen annually since the building of those dams 40 years ago. So after building those dams and stopping the Gaza Valley's water, we are talking about hundreds of millions of cubic liters stolen from the Israeli side.
Sources of groundwater in the Gaza Strip depend on the coastal aquifer, which extends from the Carmel Mountain in the north to the Sinai Peninsula in the south. Gaza portion of the coastal aquifer, groundwater, is being a subject of a secret war that only Allah and specialists of the field are aware of.
The Israeli occupation has built thousands of wells around the Gaza Strip, preventing approximately 30 to 40 million cubic meters from naturally reaching the Strip. So preventing the water of this valley from running into the Gaza Strip is a theft of Palestinian water resources committed by the occupation.
The Israeli occupation does not only steal Gaza's portion of the groundwater and the aquifer. The occupation has stolen hundreds of millions of cubic meters of water through the Israeli settlements that had existed in the Gaza Strip for tens of years.
This area was occupied by Israel. It was known as the Gush Katif settlement. The Israeli occupation used to steal groundwater from the area. This pipe is the only evidence that was used in stealing hundreds of millions of cubic meters of drinkable groundwater. Now we are in Al-Mawasi area in Khan Yunis. This area suffers severely from water scarcity and salinity. Its groundwater became undrinkable. We want the international community to punish Israel for stealing water. In the 1970s, you could find drinkable groundwater 30 centimeters in depth and 10 meters before the shore. Now the groundwater in this spot, which is 800 meters away from the sea, is found undrinkable.
Irrigation water and treated wastewater are some recharge resources of the aquifer and the Gaza Strip. Some studies indicate 15 to 20% of the volume of domestic water supply recharges the aquifer.
Wastewater basins have been established in Al-Mawasi instead of those basins close to Sofa Terminal. They are now located over the Khan Yunis groundwater aquifer. Actually, this has not succeeded. The wastewater gathers to the west of the basins, which occupy approximately 1,000 dunams. This badly affects olives, guavas, mangoes, and the greenhouses. Palm trees are the only trees that are able to stand this kind of water. Because of the intrusion of wastewater into the aquifer, we closed 25 wells. Some health reports indicate that the water of those wells includes some diseases that may be dangerous to children. I close this well and get water from another resource. I went to an organization with a report that indicates the water in my area is not drinkable at all. I use a water filter at my expense. The water filter is inside. Now the water becomes drinkable. Please come in. Now we surrender to the water condition. I and my cousins in the area depend on water filters because we don't want to lose our children as we lost the trees.
Wastewater quantities annually generated in the Gaza Strip are estimated at approximately 32 million cubic meters. 70 to 80% of the quantity is drained with no treatment.
The Gaza Valley is, as you see, now used to drain more than 10,000 cubic meters of the Middle Gaza Governorate's untreated wastewater into the sea. Unfortunately, this wastewater, with all the toxic materials it includes, reaches the sea through the Gaza Valley. More than 12,000 cubic meters of raw wastewater are drained into the Sea of Gaza. These amounts spread due to the convection currents and tides of the sea. Our study found wet and dry soil contaminated with some toxic elements of the wastewater.
Wastewater is drained into the sea, whose pollution becomes a risk to Gaza's marine life.
This place was a wastewater drainage spot, one of about 25 distributed along the shore of the Gaza Strip. Wastewater drainage to the sea badly affects fish reproduction. In such an infertile sea environment, fish will abandon the area. So some types of shore fish, which existed in good quantities in the past, are rarely seen by Palestinian fishermen now.
One of the sea pollution disadvantages is polluting some types of fish that Gazans eat.
Mullet and tuna, which are some of the shore fish in Gaza, are found slightly contaminated. But according to our study, this pollution in the fish won't move to humans. We are concerned with the future of fish resources and the absence of a lot of kinds of fish resulting from untreated toxic wastewater drainage into the sea. If children eat fish that are fed substances, including high rates of chemicals, they will be at risk of cancer and other diseases.
Eating polluted fish has a long-term risk on human health. Another short term is imposed on big numbers of Gazan vacationers who gather on the beach, the only resort in the Gaza Strip, in the summer, regardless whether the seawater is polluted or not.
This phenomenon is unhealthy to Gaza vacationers. Our study focuses mainly on parasites' existence. We found that 50% of seawater samples are contaminated with parasites. These parasites are dangerous to children, pregnant women, and old people whose immunity is weak and who may suffer chronic diseases. Parasites cause anemia, gastroenteritis, skin diseases, and conjunctivitis, or eye diseases, as soon as contaminated water touches the skin.
Protecting Gaza beach and groundwater from being polluted by wastewater depends mainly on wastewater treatment plant's capacity to treat such quantities of wastewater. There are three wastewater treatment plants in the Gaza Strip. These plants face some difficulties in its work, such as power failure. Power failure makes the plants unable to treat the entire quantities of wastewater drained to them.
This is the Al Sheikh Ajlin wastewater treatment plant in the south of Gaza City. This plant was designed to treat 40,000 cubic meters of wastewater. Unfortunately, the actual quantity of wastewater produced by Gaza City exceeds its capacity. The actual quantity is 60,000 cubic meters. Wastewater is collected inside Gaza City. As you see, it does not work because of power failure. This badly affects the quality of water treated by the plant. These machines are aerators. Such a quality of wastewater harms the life of the Palestinians. When Palestinian vacationers go to the beach, they are exposed to the harmful effects of untreated wastewater discharged at the shore. This exposure has had bad effects on vacationers' health. Even groundwater in Gaza might be affected by the wastewater's harmful effects because of an incapability to collect and treat the entire amount of wastewater.
So groundwater is at risk of leakage of untreated wastewater and seawater intrusion. This has bad effects on Gaza people, for example, agriculture in general, and citrus in particular, which need ample aggregation, are badly affected.
In the 1970s, citrus was considered the yellow gold of the Gaza Strip. It occupied the first position in Gaza agricultural production. Now citrus is estimated at approximately 6% of the entire production. It used to be approximately 90%. Poor quality water badly affected citrus and resulted in its extinction day by day, to the point that you can hardly find a local orange. Oh Hassan, we have happy memories in this grove. This grove produced 200 tons of oranges and grapefruits. The grove was as green as basil. The trees were fruity. May Allah punish the Israelis who destroyed our groves. The production of the grove declined from 200 tons in 2009 to 0 tons now. It was dried in 3 or 4 years. Can you see this? The current state of its trees makes you cry. This is Abu Hussein. Will you come? I need to buy some water. We have run out of water. I will be waiting for you. Please don't be late. Bye.
Water crisis in the Gaza Strip was aggravated by the fact that water supply for domestic use became undrinkable. This has urged people to purchase from street vendors fresh drinkable water, which is pre-treated in special water desalination plants.
As you see, this is our suffering. Excuse me, I have to bring the hose for the fresh, drinkable water. Our suffering from water is incessant. It is a big problem. I hope it can be solved someday. Unfortunately, the problem is growing. Sometimes when I call the water vendor, he sounds busy. I excuse him for this because he is really overloaded. Everybody calls him for drinkable water. The economic situation in Gaza is very hard. Some people cannot afford to buy water. Those poor people are forced to drink the saline water supplied by the municipality.
In Khan Yunis, poor people bring drinkable water from a water desalination plant for free.
Haja, why do you bring water from this place?
The water in our house is very salty. It does not taste good when used in making tea or milk or any other thing.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Israeli officials have ordered a total blockade of the Gaza Strip to compensate for heavy losses suffered during Operation Al-Aqsa Storm launched by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas on Saturday, 7th of October. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website of Arab News has covered this story and tells us more. The Palestinian envoy to the United Nations has issued a vehement condemnation of the Israeli regime's underway indiscriminate war against the Gaza Strip and its threat to bring the entire coastal sliver under an all-out siege. Riyad Mansour wrote in a letter to the United Nations Security Council on Tuesday, 10th of October, "Such blatant dehumanization and attempts to bomb a people into submission, to use starvation as a method of warfare, and to eradicate their national existence are nothing less than genocidal." Riyad Mansour added, "These acts constitute war crimes by the Israeli regime." Calling up an unprecedented 300,000 reservists, the Israeli regime has declared a long war on Gaza in response to Operation Al-Aqsa Storm. Gaza's resistance movements initiated the operation on Saturday, 7th of October, in response to the occupying regime's decades-long campaign of bloodshed and destruction of Palestinians. The military campaign has seen the regime leveling entire districts and featured its using banned white phosphorus munitions against densely populated neighborhoods of Gaza. Earlier, the Israeli War Minister Yoav Gallant drew international condemnation by announcing a total blockade of Gaza to stop food and fuel from reaching the territory, home to 2.3 million Palestinians. The war minister, Yoav Gallant, also said Israel was battling a beastly people. The United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Monday, 9th of October, said he was deeply distressed by Israel's announcement of a complete siege of Gaza. Guterres said, "The humanitarian situation in Gaza was extremely dire before these hostilities, and now it will only deteriorate exponentially." Iran's press TV has also covered the same story and tells us more. Israeli officials have ordered a total blockade of Gaza to compensate for heavy losses suffered during Operation Al-Aqsa Storm, launched by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas on Saturday, 7th of October. Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian has warned of a humanitarian catastrophe amid ongoing Israeli aggression on the besieged Gaza Strip, calling on the United Nations to adopt immediate measures to prevent the occupying regime from perpetrating further crimes and rights violations against Palestinians. Hossein Amir Abdollahian raised the alarm in a letter to United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres on Tuesday, 10th of October. In the letter, Amir Abdollahian pointed to the recent developments in Palestine and the Israeli regime's decades-long aggression against Palestinians. Amir Abdollahian touched on the plight and suffering of the Palestinian people at the hands of the illegal Zionist regime over the past seven decades. He blamed Western countries, particularly the United States of America, for the dire situation in Palestine today. The top Iranian diplomat said in the letter, "During the past seven decades, the occupying Zionist regime, without paying the slightest attention to the laws and norms of international law, including international humanitarian law and human rights, and whilst enjoying the support of the United States and the West, which protect this regime against any legal charges and punishment, has committed the most heinous war crimes, crimes against humanity, and the crime of genocide against the oppressed people of Palestine." Amir Abdollahian pointed to Operation Al-Aqsa Storm by the Palestinian resistance group Hamas, and he described the Hamas-led military action as a natural reaction of the Palestinian people in defense of their most basic rights. The Iranian foreign minister also underlined the Palestinians' right to self-defense against the occupying regime in accordance with the United Nations Charter and in accordance to international laws. Amir Abdullahian said, "The legitimate right to defence is an inherent right that is clearly recognised in the United Nations Charter and international law. The Palestinian nation, as a nation that has been unjustly deprived of the fundamental right to determine its own destiny and is exposed to attacks and violations of human rights and human dignity at any moment, unequivocally has the right to defend itself and resist occupation and aggression." In his letter to the United Nations chief, Hossein Amir Abdullahian warned about the indiscriminate killing of Palestinians by the Zionist regime in the battle against the Gaza Strip, and raised the alarm about the dangers of laying a full siege around Gaza by cutting off water and electricity and humanitarian aid. Amir Abdullahian said, "With an overview of the inhumane actions and blatant threats of the Zionist regime in recent days, I deem it necessary to warn against the occurrence of a major humanitarian catastrophe in occupied Palestine, and highlight the responsibility of the United Nations and the UN Secretary General to support the oppressed people of Palestine and to prevent the aggressor regime from continuing its violence, bloodshed and destruction."
This is Back to Reality. Back to Reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Back to Reality. Once more, I have the pleasure to be your host. I'm Asma, at your service. And then with us in here in this studio, we have Sister Bita and Sister Zainab. Well, I'm so pleased to be with you once more. But then as the ritual of this program, you have to introduce yourself briefly to the audience.
Assalamu alaikum, dear sisters and dear listeners. We're here again at Back to Reality, my honor. And, you know, it's kind of like an opportunity for me to be here again. I am Bita and I am studying medicine at one of the universities of Tehran in Iran. And that's it.
Thank you very much. And welcome back again to the studio. And you, Sister Zainab?
Assalamu alaikum. I am Zainab and I'm studying Hausa in the University of Qom. And I have done Masters of Linguistics in Kashmir University. And as always, I'm glad to be here.
The pleasure is all mine, of course, to be here with both of you. Well, you must have heard about the thing that says, do not judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure how much we can practically don't do that in our life. Because, you know, sometimes as you see someone for the first time, or even as you buy things, just the first impression, the look, the first look that you get at them, yeah, is going to do the entire impression that you're going to get.
Yeah, I do agree with that, you know. This sentence actually that don't judge the book by its cover is somehow wrong, you know, because it's something out of your control. You get the first impression by the appearance of people, you know. It's something unavoidable. You can work on your first impression, you know, and this is a good point. And you know what? I think at a first step, you have to be aware of this mere fact that everybody, consciously or unconsciously, pays attention to your appearance.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, Sister Rita, you mentioned a very good point. It's inevitable.
It is.
Whether we like it or not, when we see someone for the first time, we have some impressions. And let me just say, most of the time, and it depends on the personality you have, your judgment is going to be, to some extent, true.
Right.
But then we have to give people a chance to change.
Right.
To change the impression they have given us.
Right. So as you said in the beginning of the episode, you said that we should not decide what's in the book by its cover.
But the same cover tells a lot about the book itself, because we also have another quote which says, "Face is the index of mind."
Yeah.
So
tit for tat.
Yeah. So yes, face does tell a lot about the personality. But I asked, like, I was in my teenage, and I asked one of the psychological professors in my family, is face the index of mind? I really want to know this. Is it true to judge people by their face? And he gave a very brief and good answer. He said, not always.
So, yeah, not always.
You could be judgmental about people on the basis of their face or appearance, but it's not true always. Even Imam Ali alayhi salam says that if you just judge people on the basis of some suspicion that's in your mind, and that also comes again by the appearance,
yeah,
that's not a correct judgment. So in Islam, we are suggested not to do that. Like, on the appearance basis, you can't be judgmental. You should give time. As you said, we should give a chance. You should give a time to recognize people. And then, like, you know, again, I would say don't be judgmental.
You know, what I usually believe in is that the eyes of a person are a window to their hearts. So yes, whatever impression they give you through the look they just exchange with you, or through just the face, as you said, the face is the index to the mind. I, unfortunately, or fortunately, I do believe in that. And right now, it's time for us to go for a short break, and then we'll be back in a blink of an eye. Yes, we're talking about judging people based on our impressions. Honestly speaking, as a student of university, whenever I see a professor for the first time, or even my colleagues, I would just get the impression, and again, unfortunately, most of the time it remains fixed. I know it's not a good trait to talk about, but I guess that's the same for every single person in this world. When they see someone, they start just having some impression about them. And how does it work?
You know, I do agree with that point, that the first impression you get will remain with you.
It will last forever. Yeah,
exactly, it will last forever. But I think it's true for most kind of superficial communication that we have. Mm-hmm. When you go deeper in communications with other people, like some of your best friends and so on, I think you forget this first impression. And this is the point that will happen.
Through interactions, you mean.
Exactly. Through so many interactions, several interactions. And when time passes, you will understand different aspects of different people, okay? And, you know, the first impression doesn't work anymore, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And another thing that I wanted to tell you is that some people think that having a first impression is something bad. It's not something bad, okay?
It's just a clue.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the problem is, when you act according to your first impression towards that person.
Perfect, okay? Yeah.
Sometimes your action based on your first impression will make that person to behave towards whatever you think.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And then they would be the victim of your just
exactly.
suspicions.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we should give them a chance.
You know, sometimes when you see people reacting weirdly in the very first meeting with you, they also say that first impression is the last impression. As Sister Bita was talking, I was listening to her. I remember this line, like, they say first impression is the last impression.
We ourselves have experienced that as well.
Yeah, because it kind of remains with you. Yes, most of the time it does. But as you ask me the question, shall we give the chance? We should definitely, because you never know the first, at the very first impression someone was talking to you, you never know what he or she was going through. You know, sometimes it's not like people, the behavior of a people is always based upon the surroundings they have been dealt with. You know, sometimes people are happy, they would react in overjoy. Sometimes people are out of this. Sometimes people have.
So you mean based on their conditions?
Exactly. So the conditions they would have had, on those places people react. So, and we should not just be judgmental on this. We just see the outcome of that reaction. We don't see the conditions. So we should give ourselves, if we have a bad impression especially, so we should give a chance To look at those conditions.
Because we all are human beings. We know that there are some bad days and bad timings. Exactly. And maybe you see me exactly in that bad day of my life. And then the impression you're going to get and then the judgment that you're going to get through is going to be the wrong one. So once more, we have to go for another break to change a bit of mood and then be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Welcome back. This is Back to Reality. We're talking about one of the most common things that would happen in every one of our lives. Well, we're talking about judging people based on our impressions. Is it right or is it wrong? Well, up to now, we understood that our impressions are sometimes a good help for us to know how to treat with other people. But at the very same time, it might be the wrong judgment and the wrong day and the wrong time. So we have to give people a chance because it has happened to us that many times people judge us based on what we are not exactly.
Yeah.
And we turn out to be the victims of the lenses they have on their eyes. I usually say that we judge people based on our cultural, religious, whatever kind of background we have in our brain.
You mentioned this beautiful, actually, thing that sometimes we have to think of the times that we were judged by people and, you know, they think of us as something we're not. Okay?
Exactly.
And, you know,
and how hurting it is.
Exactly. It hurts so much. And it is one of the methods that we have to work on in order not to being under control of these first impressions so much. Okay. If you want to control your first impression of other people, I think you have to think of your own first impression that you give to other people.
Okay. Exactly.
And thinking on that will help you to control yourself in order not to act in a way to be so much judgmental or something. And another thing I wanted to tell you, we have this narration in Islam, which I'm not sure from which infallible, peace be upon them. But it says the concept of this narration is that you shouldn't put yourself in the position of suspicion. Okay.
Yeah, that's very true.
So it means that...
I was about to say that.
Yeah. So what does it say? It says that it's something natural to be judged by your first impression. Okay?
Exactly. Because you have a brain.
Exactly.
You know? That's for analysis.
You know, we're human beings and we have a kind of a strong tendency to make mistakes about other people. So this is something natural and you have to avoid this. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And you have to work on yourself at the first step, and then this will help you to control your first impression of other people.
To avoid putting yourself in a position where people start judging you.
Exactly.
Like, for example, wearing a special sort of dress.
Yeah.
Being dressed up in a special style.
I know. Like,
would give people some impressions about you. Speaking in a sort of a special language would give people a special... suspicions about you. So if you are so much eager not to be judged like that, then try to avoid putting
exactly.
yourself in those situations.
Exactly. Because, you know, we also have from one of the hadiths from Imam Ali Alayhi Salam, where he tells to one of the persons that just in case you attend a religious gathering and you're representing something, try to be more happy or, like, you know, try to be very cheerful so that people get a good impression from you. They don't
yeah.
get some, you know, weird kind of impression.
Yeah, vivacity is a good
just
feature.
Just because many of you, you don't know, they're attending. Maybe someone is attending for the first and the last time and your facial expressions could give a
yeah, that's very
good
true.
And bad expression. So especially I would say the representatives of some particular community, particular religious sect or even a country, or, like, you know, sometimes you're invited as a delegation to some other country and you're just picked one person from the crowd, you should yourself behave in a way that you, because you're, and you should remember you're representing the entire
exactly
nation, entire community. My father would often say this helped us a lot to be very modest in our teenage days. He would say that when you're coming out of home as a girl, you're representing the entire Kashmiri women and you're representing the entire
your sisters of your family. Maybe one of your sisters is even more modest than you. Other is like, you know, much more, they don't actually go out. But you kind of are like very outspoken and outgoing. You should be taking care of that you're presenting your sisters as well. So, you know, you yourself should not be giving or coming out in a way that would give some negative or, you know, weird impressions about you or your family to others.
Yeah, so the gist of what we said in this part of today's episode was that the sentence that Sister Bita and Sister Zainab said, do not put yourself in the position of being suspected by other people if you are very much not interested to be judged. Because if you give them some clues, pretty much naturally they have a brain and they would analyze that and they would give some judgment based on that. So the first thing, we as the audience of the person, as the people who are going to meet new people, we have to just give people time and do not pass judgment on other people. Give them some time and let them prove themselves to you. Because as we said, we are all human beings. We have bad days. We have sad days. So we shouldn't judge each other based on one just meeting. And then the other thing is that if we are so eager not to be judged by other people, we shouldn't put ourselves in the situation of being suspected. And yes, that was all for today's episode. I hope you all enjoyed today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, ya Rabb al alamin, ya Rahman, ya Rahim, ya Rabbi, let the ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
ya Rabb al alamin, يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي let the ummah rise again, let us see daylight again, once again.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
In the United States, former President Donald Trump is seeking to reassert himself as the Republican kingmaker in the fight for the Speaker of the House of Representatives. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Cable broadcaster CNN, the cable news network, has covered the story and tells us more. There was only one way the chaos in the Republican-led House, likened on Thursday, 5th of October, by one of its members to a stupid clown car, could get more extreme. Enter Donald Trump. The former president dived into the mayhem following the ouster of House Speaker Kevin McCarthy, characteristically seeking to cast himself as kingmaker and to steal the spotlight for himself. On a day of drama that recalled the pandemonium inside the Trump White House, the ex-president's camp floated rumors of his potential first visit to the U.S. Capitol since his mob ransacked it on 6th of January 2021. Then Donald Trump teased the possibility that he could even step in as Speaker of the House himself on an interim basis. But the ex-president's biggest bombshell was still to come. Shortly after midnight, He endorsed Judiciary Chairman Jim Jordan for the job. He will be a great Speaker of the House and has my complete and total endorsement, Donald Trump wrote on his Truth Social network in a post that spent more time lauding Jim Jordan's prowess as a student wrestler than his political career. The Ohio Republican, who is one of the most polarizing figures in Washington and one of Donald Trump's most loyal attack dogs, is playing a key role in an impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden. Jim Jordan, who is running against the Republican House Majority Leader Steve Scalise of Louisiana for the top job, would likely augur a new period of fierce combat with the White House if he wins the speakership. He has opposed the U.S. lifeline of arms and ammunition to Ukraine, and a Republican House majority led by Jim Jordan would likely increase the chances of a government shutdown next month in a showdown over spending with Democrats. But Jim Jordan's candidacy and a Trump endorsement will likely alarm more moderate Republicans on whose seats the thin GOP majority was built, and who fear voters in their districts will be alienated by Donald Trump on the top of the ticket in 2024. The backing of these and other centrist Republicans could be critical in the race between Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise, the latter of whom may have more appeal, especially with major donors outside the far right of the party, than Jim Jordan. Steve Scalise, who survived the 2017 shooting at a congressional baseball practice and has recently been treated for blood cancer, is widely popular in the conference. He has also voted in favor of more aid to Ukraine, a factor that is important for some of the moderate Republicans who are closer to the GOP's traditional hawkish internationalism than Donald Trump's Make America Great Again nationalism. Plans to hold a joint interview between Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise on Fox News on Monday, just a day before a scheduled meeting with the House GOP conference, were quickly upended after several House Republicans reacted angrily to the plan, with one calling it insanity and another saying it will turn the Speaker's race into a circus. Facing blowback, Jim Jordan said he'll speak to the conference before participating, throwing the timing of the Fox event into question. Jim Jordan believes it is crucial to meet with the GOP conference before the event. Donald Trump's decision to throw himself into the fray as the Speaker's race escalates capped a wild week that started with Washington continuing its blessing after a sudden weekend gamble by the then Speaker, Kevin McCarthy, headed off a government shutdown that had seemed inevitable. But it was the ultimate false dawn. As the next weekend looms, American governance is paralyzed because Kevin McCarthy has been toppled by GOP right-wingers after only 9 months in a post he'd pursued for years. And no one knows when the House will have a new Speaker or who exactly will it be. National broadcaster NBC News has also covered this story and tells us more. Former President Donald Trump waded into the contested race for House Speaker on Friday, 6th of October, throwing his support behind one of his top allies on Capitol Hill, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, Jim Jordan. As president, I had the honor of presenting Jim with our country's highest civilian award, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So much is learned from sports, and Jim was a master, Trump said of the Ohio Republican, former NCAA wrestling champ and coach, in a post on his Truth Social platform on Friday, 6th of October. Donald Trump said on Truth Social, he's strong on crime, border, and our military, on Veterans Affairs and Second Amendment. He will be a great Speaker of the House and has my complete and total endorsement. The endorsement appears to take Donald Trump himself out of the running for the speakership after several GOP allies, including Representatives Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia and Troy Nels of Texas, endorsed the former president for the job, following Representative Kevin McCarthy's ouster from the position. On Thursday, 5th of October, multiple Republican sources confirmed that Donald Trump was considering a visit to the U.S. Capitol early next week. In the words of one GOP lawmaker familiar with the plans, the visit would be a bid to unify the Republican Party after Kevin McCarthy's stunning removal, and amid a fractious brawl between Jim Jordan and Majority Leader Steve Scalise, Republican of Louisiana, to seize the Speaker's gavel. Speaking on Friday, 6th of October, with John Solomon, a right-wing political commentator and founder of the website Just the News, Donald Trump said he hasn't decided whether he'll visit the Capitol Hill next week. Elected to Congress in 2006, Jim Jordan began his career in Washington as a conservative bomb thrower. Like Steve Scalise, he led the Republican Study Committee, the largest caucus of conservatives on Capitol Hill. But frustrated that the group was too big and slow, Jim Jordan, along with then-representatives Mark Meadows and Mick Mulvaney and Ron DeSantis, founded the smaller ultra-conservative House Freedom Caucus in 2015. Freedom Caucus members named Jim Jordan their first chairman, and later that year the group was credited for forcing then-Speaker John Boehner, an Ohioan like Jim Jordan, into an early retirement. A terrorist, a legislative terrorist, John Boehner said of Jim Jordan during a no-holds-barred interview with the website Politico in 2017. Because of the reputation, some moderate members of the Republican conference could balk at a Jim Jordan speakership. And because of the GOP's razor-thin majority, it would take just 5 centrist Republicans to block Jim Jordan in a formal speaker vote on the House floor, if all the Democrats unite behind Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat of New York. But in recent years, Jim Jordan underwent a stark political transformation. He aligned himself with Kevin McCarthy, stopped the public attacks on the Republican leadership team, and was brought into the leadership's inner circle. In fact, it was Kevin McCarthy who pushed for Jim Jordan to get the top GOP slot on the Oversight Committee, and later the powerful Judiciary Committee, where he is one of the 3 leaders of the impeachment inquiry into President Joe Biden.
Hidden Files. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Children's carefree laughter is one of the most heartwarming sounds in the world. Watching them run around, fall, and get back on their feet again gives us hope for life. Now, what would it be like if, instead of nice and strong skin, the children's body was covered with a layer as delicate as the wings of a butterfly? What if every little bump would mean a burning blister? How then would a child run and play and fill the world with joy? Today's program is on the plight of Iran's butterfly children, whose access to medicine is entangled with political sanctions placed on the country. But who are the butterfly children? And what exactly is their condition?
Epidermolysis bullosa is a genetic condition which affects the skin. It is caused by faults in the proteins that act as the glue which holds our layers of skin together. In EB, the slightest knock or bump causes the skin layers to separate, making blisters and wounds. Kids born with it are often called butterfly children because their skin is as fragile as the wings of a butterfly. Skin is our protection from the outside world. Skin that is working properly allows us to play, run, hug, sleep without a thought. It's not the same for people who live with EB. Walking becomes increasingly hard over time as the feet get more and more damaged. The simple joy of holding a crayon becomes difficult.